So a lot of kids have already gone back to school. But next week, everybody will have gone back to school. For those who have not gone back to school, next week, the Chicago Public Schools are going to be in full swing. Everything, every school room, theoretically, that's having kids in the schools will be having the kids in the schools. Dr. Richard Heller is joining us right now. He's a Vice President of Clinical Services and National Director of Pediatric Radiology for Radiology Partners, the largest radiology practice, I suppose the best way to put that, in the United States. Busiest, certainly. And, Doctor, thank you very much for being with us. And you wrote just this week, you wrote an article about kids and COVID and some of the misunderstanding that there is. There's obviously, everybody's got an opinion about COVID. Very few people have the facts. So you you were tasked with at least explaining how this affects little kids and the transmissibility of it, and also how whether or not they actually are contagious to their older siblings or their parents or grandparents or whatever it is. So let's just start at the very beginning here. And if people have got questions, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number, which will be able to answer those for you as well. So as kids are going back to school, are the younger kids safer than the teenagers and certainly than college kids and then as everybody gets older?
So first let me say thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to speak with you. So the essay began with some questions that arose. There was a lot of misinformation out there about children and COVID and going back to school. You know, people were saying, you know, kids don't really get COVID. I'm not really that worried because kids don't get COVID. Kids don't spread COVID. Kids don't really get sick with it. And so the idea behind this, I was asked to write it to sort of shed some light and show what the data has shown. And what the data has shown is really been a mixed bag, that it is true that children in general don't actually, by and large, get that sick when they get COVID. In fact, the Korean study that people are quoting a lot now that just came out a week or so ago, the vast majority of those kids, two-thirds of the kids that actually got symptoms, had unrecognized symptoms before they were positive. And a decent percentage of the kids, like a fifth of the kids, never even got symptoms. So most kids get mild or no symptoms. And that's really a double-edged sword. And it's good because, look, the kids aren't getting that sick, and that's fantastic. The problem is, if your surveillance policy is based on flagging kids that are sick, it's not going to work. Because at least a fifth of the kids, you're never going to know they have it because they have no symptoms. And by the time those kids are showing symptoms, they've already probably been contagious for some time.
Is that a higher rate than it is for adults in terms of being asymptomatic?
We haven't had widespread testing, so that's a great question in terms of, you know, what percentage of it is in the community. The University Lurie Children's Northwestern actually did a study on that, and it seemed like it sort of was paralleling the rate in the general community if you're just doing testing of asymptomatic children. And they were testing everybody that was coming to the hospital, mm-hmm. whether it was for COVID or not. So they were able to get a baseline rate. And so it does seem like it can sort of mirror what's going on in the community. But what's going to be interesting is when we go back to school, because remember, we pulled the plug pretty early on this. In many places in the country, we pulled the plug pretty quickly.
Yeah, and so, early March, yeah.
Exactly. And so that probably saved a lot of lives and isolated a lot of children. So when people say, oh, you know, kids weren't doing this or kids weren't that, yeah, the kids were home. We pulled the plugs on kids. You know, it wasn't like kids still had to go to work and were getting out. For the most part, kids were being isolated. Kids were home.
Right.
And so now what's going to happen is when kids are going back to school, what are we going to see? And I think that's the big question.
Yeah. Is there an algorithm that's looking at this, or is there any kind of projective way to analyze it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So you're looking at what's happening with colleges, right? Colleges have already gone back. And so at the Big Ten schools, they've already had, 4,000 cases? You know, Ole Miss has already had 300 and something cases. UNC already had to pivot and go remote. James Madison, you know, already had 600 plus cases, and they had to change their plans. So what we're seeing is when people start coming back to school in these, you know, close quarters, yeah, we start seeing outbreaks again. And I think that's what people were worried about when we start to see the kids getting back together in schools, that we need to be careful about it.
So what I hear most commonly, and I'm sure there are people now screaming at the radio about this, is, well, if they're not getting that sick, what the hell difference does it make?
So that's a great question. So I want to be clear that this doesn't say necessarily kids shouldn't be going back to school. It just says we need to be aware of how we do it and we need to be thoughtful about the way we do it. And I think what you're saying now is what I've heard some people say is the rip the Band-Aid off. Look, no one's getting that sick. Let's go for herd immunity. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off like the old chicken pox parties, right? Just rip the Band-Aid off. We'll all get a little sick, and then we'll get better, and we'll have it. The problem is that this isn't chicken pox, right? That you're going to have people that are going to get really sick, and that you're going to have you know, an incredible number of mortality, not just morbidity, but mortality. Yeah. And so it's not one of those things where you just want to rip the Band-Aid off. It's one of those things where we need to be very respectful of how serious this illness is.
Right. To those who do get sick with it. And again, the older you are, the more likely you are the more likely you are to have the underlying conditions, the comorbidities, those other issues that are going to potentially make you so sick that you have to be hospitalized, you may have to be in intensive care, you may have to be on a ventilator, all of that. And that's sort of a descending percentage, but that's happening to enough people. I mean, more than 1,000 people died in the United States yesterday, and they did the day before and the day before that. We're over the 1,000 mark now as we're going through this, as you know, people are coming back. And it's not necessarily young kids. As I'm looking at the Illinois numbers, we get them every day. It's generally people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I thought this was kind of an interesting moment, too. And we'll come right back. Richard, hold on one second for me, because I got to take a quick break, and then we'll come right back to Richard Heller, who's a pediatrician, pediatric radiologist, who's written this piece about getting kids back to school safely and what does this all mean. Plus your phone calls if you would like, 312-981-7200 if you got a question for him. But it's this idea of, well, if somebody's 70 and they're going to die anyway. I mean, I don't think we can really, I don't think you'd say that at Thanksgiving. Oh, well, wait a second. Maybe I'll take that back. Maybe some people would say that at Thanksgiving. All right, we have got Jen DeSalvo right now. She's got the WGN traffic and weather. Coming out of the program, Danny Noonan is going to be here. Yeah, that Danny Noonan from Caddyshack. Really? Yeah, I'm not kidding. Michael O'Keefe is the actor's name, and he played Danny Noonan 30-something years ago in Caddyshack. And let me just say one thing. He wants to be a caddy again in the U.S. Open. It's kind of interesting. He's begging. So we'll let him beg here. It's coming your way after the Knarble Wagon today after 5 o'clock. Dr. Richard Heller is with us right now. He's a pediatric radiologist at Radiology Partners, the largest radiology partnership, I would imagine, in the United States. All right, let's talk about kids going back to school. You're a parent. You've got two boys. And are they going back to in-classroom, or are they splitting it? How is that working?
So I think that people need to make, you know, I'll talk about our personal decision, but I think that it is a personal decision, and I can see how reasonable people could come to a different conclusion. For example, one of our kids starts in-person part-time learning this coming week. But I'll be honest, if we were living with somebody that we were earlier in the summer that was on chemotherapy, it'd probably be a very different conversation if we were going to let him go back, if we were going to go remote. And I can understand that. So, you know, my wife and I had to have a conversation about what are our risk factors, what risk are we willing to accept, and make a personal decision. And I could see how other families could make that decision looking at that and saying, like, look, we have a high-risk person that we're in close contact with. This is not an acceptable risk for us. Right. And that's why I think it's so important that people have an honest conversation about what the risks are and understand that, because the risks aren't zero, but the risks are not 100%. And so that's why I think you have to have those honest conversations and look at the data. And that's why I was asked to write that essay.
Yeah, so let's talk about the risk, though. I think that's the big, almost now, political, or in some cases almost evangelical reality for people. They either believe that this is a completely risky situation or it has no risk at all. There's very few conversations that are in the middle, that are gradient, that are nuanced, because that's kind of where we are here. So as a parent, let's just kind of go through what you were thinking. Obviously now you're not living with somebody who is at higher risk, but you and your wife are adults. So do you feel a risk?
Oh, absolutely. And some of this is going to be rational and some of it's going to be irrational. And I need to understand that. So, you know, I know people that we've seen in our practices and around the country, they can all tell stories of, we had a guy come in who was, you know, in his 30s or 40s, you know, maybe had some obesity, maybe not, you know, came in on Tuesday, passed away on Friday. And so those cases, you know, that's anecdotal. So that's not necessarily evidence-based, it's anecdotal. Mm-hmm. But man, that puts the fear of God in you. You're like, yeah. you know, are you going to be that one? You can understand it's unlikely, but it's not 0%, but although it is unlikely. So that's where you have to sort of judge things where your personal beliefs and the data intersect.
And you're not really that concerned. I don't want to put the words in your mouth here, but I think parents aren't really as concerned about their kids, especially kids who are under 16 years old. They're not so concerned about their health as much as they're concerned about what's happening in the family as a whole. What would you do? What are you going to take any precautions, or would you suggest people take a precaution, like making sure that you take kids' temperature every day, or is there any other precaution they should be taking?
Well, so first of all, I do want to say that while the vast majority of kids don't get that sick, there are some kids that do develop serious illness. In fact, you know, a third of the kids that have to go to the hospital end up in the ICU. And as was noted earlier in the pandemic,
it's a much higher number than it would be for the adults going in to the hospital.
It's a real number. And then there's this something called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, or easier pronounced, MISI. Just call it MISI. And so MISI is this, you know, new sort of being defined illness which occurs in children. And the CDC has gotten about 800 cases since this began. And these are kids that get, you know, very seriously ill, and it's had fatalities. So while the vast majority of kids that get it don't get that sick, we need to understand that some kids that get it get very sick, and there have been fatalities. So it's something we can't be cavalier about. We do have to be very respectful of it.
Yeah. But we don't know. I guess that's the great fear, is that everybody's guessing. It's a gamble, essentially.
Well, there's some things that are known. You have to be honest, and I think that's what the conversation needs to be about, that, yes, there are things that we know, there are things that we don't know, and we have to understand that as the data changes, you know, we may have to alter our guidelines, and that can be very upsetting. There was a survey that just came out this past week on looking at people's thoughts about what's been going on during COVID, and one of the questions was about trust, and physicians ranked at the highest of people's trust. But it actually had gone down since the pandemic began, but physicians were still number one. And I was on a call about this, and we were talking about how important it is that as physicians, we need to be honest in our communications, tell people what we know and what we don't know. And so that way, if things change, well, I thought you told me last week not to do this. Correct. Here's why I'm now altering my guidance, that we're looking at the data, which is constantly coming out, and then trying to alter our guidelines based on that.
Right, because it's new. Although, I'll tell you, when I see my physician, and he looks down, I mean, it is interesting to watch, I'm sure it's true with you as well, body language with the physician, because you know, it's sort of like, oh, no, it's going to be okay. And they're like, no, we're really not. No, you do have to be kind of careful here.
You do have to be kind of careful out there. And again, every physician I know has stories about this now, about people that they've seen in the hospital that has really put the fear of God in them, they've really seen it. And then many of them have had it. And, you know, frankly, you know, a good friend of mine who had it did not end up in the hospital, but, you know, they were talking like it felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. I checked my pulse ox. I didn't have to go to the hospital, but I was sick as a dog. I felt terrible. I hope that you don't have to get this. And it's scary.
Yeah. Let's get a phone call in here. 312-981-7200. Talk to Dr. Richard Heller. He is Vice President of Clinical Services, National Director of Pediatric Radiology for Radiology Partners. And he's written an article about kids going back to school and what to expect for COVID and how to keep your kids safe. Sue, go ahead.
Hi, my question is this. I was wondering if it makes any sense to do mass testing for students for antibodies, because would that help us know that they're not going to get it? I work at a school. My son is attending school full time, and he's a type 1 diabetic, and I have a daughter away at college. So it's like, that would be nice if we just knew who's more susceptible or not. So I'll hang up and let you answer.
All right, great question.
So I think it's a two-part question, really, is the value of widespread testing and then the antibody test. So you have to trust the test. And I think there's, you know, issue one is, do we trust the antibody test? Like, are we sure that when you say you've got antibodies, what does that mean? Does it quantitate it to tell you exactly what the antibodies mean? And then what immunity do you have based on that? And I think that is still, to my understanding, somewhat of a question mark. That we know that if you have antibodies, that's good. But the question is, how long, what kind of antibodies, how long do they last, what degree of immunity? And I think that's what's being worked out in a lot of these vaccine trials. Yes, that would certainly help. But the bigger question is, you know, the idea of widespread testing. I think we all agree on the value of widespread testing. The one caveat that I think Dr. Fauci made, which I think is important to note, is that, you know, when you try to create these sort of pseudo bubbles, like around colleges and things like that, where you do testing of everybody, you say, well, we've tested everybody and everybody's negative. Yeah, but it's in the community, right? So I think you would be very naive to think that, you know, pseudo bubble that you've created that are, you know, within the community is not going to leak into your bubble. Of course it will, if it's in the community. And so I think it's wise to be doing widespread testing, particularly since we know that children
are there. I got about 10 seconds left here, but are there tests that are better than others?
There's, I think we're all anxious to see what's going to happen with this new Abbott test that's inexpensive, it's going to be widespread, and I think that will be very useful. If you can have an accurate, widespread, inexpensive test, I think that could be a real impact.
All right. Dr. Richard Heller, Associate Chief Medical Officer for Communications and Health Policy, National Director of Pediatric Radiology at Radiology Partners. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your time. We got news coming your way.